Hello and welcome to an Earth First radio special. Today we present the history of Earth First. This was presented around a campfire at the 2005 Round River Rendezvous in the Northern Cascades of Oregon. This program will be presented in four parts, and this segment is part four.
So I have a quick story for y'all. I'm pretty new to the movement, about a year, and I live in Tucson, and I just graduated from the U of A, and I'd been working at the school newspaper as the science news reporter. And I was just starting to make friends with Chuksha on Earth First, and I just graduated, but I was still on all these listservs that you get on when you're the science news reporter. And so I get this email message that FBI agent, Special Forces Eco-Terrorism Agent Phil Celestini is on tour. He's coming to the U of A to give a talk about eco-terrorism and the animal liberation movement. So I thought, well, that's interesting. School's out. Nobody's going to be around. I passed the email on to a few of my friends. And I decide, well, I'm going to go and we're going to see what this is about. And I'm going to take this because, I don't know, this could be useful sometime. And so we go to the student union and there's about 90 or 100 scientists in this room. And so we get in the back, we set up the video camera, and these two FBI agents come out and they're wearing these nice suits. And they're young, slick guys, you know, no beards, clean shaven. And they start with this PowerPoint lecture. And they put up some maps saying, like, this is where eco-terrorism is hitting the country with stars. And about a quarter way through the lecture, here comes Chuksha on Earth First into the meeting. And there's no more chairs. And so they sit down on the floor in the back. And I thought, well, yeah, they just done an action. And I thought, well, this is interesting. Here they all are sitting on the floor in the back. But I don't think that Celestini realizes this. So he keeps going on with his lecture. And he's putting up slides, like, trying to characterize the people in the movement. So they go through. Psychology says, you know, it's very interesting. These people are very dedicated to the movement. They will do it anything. They won't stop for anything. And they, it's all written on these PowerPoint slides. And then they go on to the next slide. Like, they're very tech savvy and they know how to use computers. And, you know, it's listed as these bullet points. You know, we're like, wow, they're characterizing the movement pretty well. Like, this is pretty impressive. And they're going through and then they're like, well, here's how to make one of their incendiary devices. And they like put it up there. And they're like, me and this other agent went out and we like pretended and we made one of these and it was something with a milk jug and they had pictures of them setting it off and, you know, so it goes slide after slide for like about an hour and then they open it up for questions and somebody from Earth First gets up and asks about COINTELPRO and he kind of slides his way out of that question and the scientists are all asking questions and by the way, the U of A is building this four complex called the Institute for Biosciences and Biotech. And they're coming to together with the Genome Project and some other people. So I think that's why they came to our school. I'm not sure. But so there's a scientist in the front and he's got his hand up and he's really upset. And you have to understand, like, most of the talk was focused on the ELF and the ALF. Earth First is in there a little bit, but this guy, he wants his question. And so he finally calls on him and he goes, I want to know what you're doing about Earth First. He's like, they caused $100,000 of damage to my Mount Ground project. And, you know, here's Chuksha and Earth First sitting in the back, kind of high-fiving each other, you know, like, yes. And Agent Phil Celestini goes, well, to be honest, we're not really concerned about Earth First right now. You know, we're not really paying attention. We're more concerned about the ALF and the ELF. So we're like, high five again. Like, that's really cool. And then so the end of the slideshow is he puts up, I kid you not, the end slide, the one that stays up for, you know, like 20 minutes, is a picture of the Matrix, the guy from the Matrix with the cape. But it has his face in it, Phil Celestini's face. Agent. And it's him. It's the Matrix guy. So that's the end of my story. I thought you guys would be glad to know that they're not too concerned about you right now.
I'm going to take you way back early 1990s. Just to give you a little background, in Santa Cruz, we don't have a whole lot of public land. We got little slivers of BLM here and there, but there ain't much public land. So all the logging is on private land. And there's a company in Santa Cruz called Big Creek Lumber. The owner of Big Creek Lumber, one of them is Bud McCrary. He and his family started logging in the Santa Cruz Mountains in 1945 or 46 using old Army surplus tanks, which they converted into skidders. Anyway, they thought they're big shit, and they still do. But they bought a piece of property from a company called Pacific Lumber Company. You ever heard of them? Anyway, this piece of property is called the Butano. It still had a few residual old growth redwood trees on it. And so Big Creek Lumber filed a timber harvest plan to go out and log this residual old growth, 5 to 7 trees per acre. Well, Santa Cruz Earth First didn't think this was a good idea, and so we mounted a campaign against Big Creek Lumber to try and stop the logging of Butano. It was a three-prong attack. We were going to file a lawsuit against them and get them to save the old growth. We saved 27 trees with a lawsuit. And we were going to have a tree sit, and we were going to blockade the main gate to the lumber mill, which is about 9 miles north of Santa Cruz. So the tree sitters head out into the woods, and the mill blockaders head up to the mill. Well, there's this woman from the Greenpeace Canvas who decides that she wants to be the lockdown person at the main gate. We had this piece of iron pipe about 4 inches in diameter, and she went up, and we swung the main gate to Big Creek Lumber closed, and she put her arms around the gate and the post and stuck her arms into this piece of black iron pipe. Well, we weren't too smart, and we didn't know about little bracelets and stuff like that, so she was just holding her hands inside this piece of iron pipe. Well, the sheriff shows up, tries to talk her into taking her hands out, and she says, no, I'm not going to do that, and they can't get her to take her hands out of the pipe and unlock. Well, she wasn't even locked. She was just holding her hands inside the pipe. So finally, the Big Creek Lumber folks, who don't know that she's not really locked into this piece of pipe, decide that the only way that they're going to get her off the gate is to cut the gate apart. They get their saws in there, and they're cutting the gate apart. They're sawing through this piece of pipe, and it takes about 15 minutes to saw through this piece of pipe. And when they saw through it, they finally figure out that they cut the wrong piece of pipe. They make 2 or 3 more cuts, and by this time, their gate is sort of in shambles. It becomes pretty obvious that the next cut that they're going to make is right next to this woman's face on the gate. And so the gate's pretty much trashed at this point, except that she still has her arms in this black piece of iron pipe. So they bring the saw right down next to her face, and they're going to start cutting. She says, oh, forget this, and just takes her hands out of the plastic pipe and walks off. The other funny thing is that it's not so funny. The tree sitter who was up in the tree, the sheriff's deputies went up to the tree sit, and they pointed semi-automatic weapons at him and told him that if he didn't come out of the tree, they were going to shoot him down. So he came down out of the tree, but unfortunately, a couple of weeks earlier when he was reconning the tree sit, he dropped his wallet in the forest, and they eventually gave him his wallet back. But don't go in the woods with your wallet in the pocket.
There's a place in Detroit, Oregon, the Horse Buyers Auction. There were some really good people at Detroit Lake that had a motel, and they let us camp out in their motel. We put a Dragon in the road, locked down concrete in the road. Had a Thunderbird. It's a great car. Seems the car might have been stolen, but I wasn't too sure. I just kind of climbed into the car, and we drove up from Eugene, and they told me to be really careful because there was a hole in the car, and not to, like, you know, lean near the hole while we were going down the highway. Car didn't run very well. We were kind of like wondering if we would make it there or not. So we got the car up to the logging road, and we managed to get the car right over the hole where the Dragon was within about 6 inches, and then the engine died, and we couldn't get the car started again. So somehow we managed with like 12, 13 of us to bounce the car over the hole because we couldn't get the car started again. We got the car over the hole, took the wheels off the car, threw the wheels in somebody else's car who drove off somewhere else. This is known as the Nut Family Action. At this point, there was a Warner Creek, Cascadia Free State, Southern Oregon. There was an action in Southern Oregon, the Sucker Free State. We had just finished the Cove Mallard Free State, which was talked about earlier with Jack Road, Jack Squat. I don't remember the official name of it. So to us, this was kind of like Cascadia Free State number 4. Of course, number 3, you know, if you're Northern Rockies and you aren't part of Cascadia. And this was the same night that Jack Squat was busted up. So basically, basically it's kind of the pinnacle of late 90s of the salvage rider of all the free states. We had way too many chocolate espresso beans that evening. We were digging up the road. We were decorating the road. Really amazing family. The reason it's called the Nut Family Reunion is when we were first organizing the action, we all took up nut names. There was walnut, bustin' nut, lug nut, peanut, pine nut, cashew, pinion. There were some other nuts that I might remember later. Yes, there was a wing nut. Talk to Cascadia Forest Alliance if you want to know who that wing nut is. Beer nut, of course, another Cascadia Forest Alliance member. You might know who that one was. Once the sun started coming up and we all had bloody hands from digging up the road with one pickaxe that had lots of, it was kind of like a broken handle kind of situation. Loggers came up and saw us and they kind of went away, and then the cops came up and saw us and kind of went away, and then the reporters came up and took pictures of us, and we had these little fake plastic chains, so we all wrapped ourselves in chains to kind of keep us, well, we weren't really keeping warm, but it made us feel comfortable and while we were sleeping because of all the espresso beans that were kind of catching up to us. Time went on. They kept coming and going, and by the time 2-3 o'clock in the afternoon came by and they couldn't get into cut, we were all pretty sleepy because of too many espresso beans and too much hot boxing inside the Thunderbird before the sun came up. Ultimately, we all woke up to a great number of cops. They all kind of chased us out, and there were still some of us that kind of hung loose or stuck around in the woods. They took all of our gear that when we got surprised, we kind of lost all our backpacks, all our supplies, piled it all up in the middle of the road. And some of us managed to go back and recover some of our gear. One of it was the infamous blue backpack that the cops, the Forest Service, talked about 2 years after that. And constantly, every time we went to Detroit, they were always wondering about this blue backpack because we managed to recover it. At the end of the day, they got the Thunderbird away. The way that they got the lockdown who was inside the Thunderbird out of the car was by basically just kind of spinning him until his arm was so twisted that he knew his circulation was cut off and he'd either unclip or cut off his circulation and do severe damage to his arm. Once they got us all out of there, all the cops went down, started drinking a little bit, and then they realized that we were all hanging out at this motel. The motel was run by these really great people who used to also rent out motel rooms to the loggers. They said that we were a little bit messier than the loggers. They couldn't really understand why we always traveled with lots of rotten vegetables and just didn't really make sense to them, and they had a hard time cleaning up, but they really loved the forest, and they were really thankful we were there. Little as it started to kind of get dark, all of a sudden there were about 7-8 Forest Service vehicles in the parking lot of the motel. They wanted to know where the blue backpack was. Of course, as with the other stories, we had all changed our clothes and we all looked much different by then. It was a rather kind of threatening situation, but the Forest Service is still not allowed in that motel. Unfortunately, after, you know, the Nut Family Reunion was a great time. It was the fourth free state. It didn't last longer than 24 hours. We came back to Eugene. We went to the journal office. We told everybody about what happened. And that was when we got the word that Jack Squat went down. That was when, about a few days later, we got the word that Sucker Free State went down. We started feeling like bugs under a boot. And ultimately, Warner Creek went down. But it was a great time. And the Cascadia family is still so well represented here. Thanks.
You've been listening to a special production of Earth First Radio. I'm your host, Uncle Dennis. Thank you for listening.